When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Oh, it's a goal. Who got the assist?
Hello. So we continue trundling along in this most weird romp of a football season as the second game week back ends with the crowning of Liverpool as the Premier League champions. Congratulations, Scousers, especially those in the Hertfordshire area. Anyway, it's late and we're whizzing through a pod for me to do the night shift to edit and publish for you guys overnight. But we're here to do it all the same. And it's nice to have a raise on Vetra after all. Fresh from being unexpectedly called away last pod, Anthony and I are rejoined by arrested and no doubt reinvigorated Nick after his wildcard paid dividends this week. You're right, mate, that's two very good weeks in a row, isn't it? How you doing?
Hey, Tom. Yeah, glad to be back. Congratulations to Liverpool and all the Liverpool fans who've been waiting 30 years to finally get that Premier League title. So, yeah, fantastic news for that club. Just to say who we are Who Got the Assist. We're on Twitter at WGT_FPL for Thomas, at WGTA_Nick for myself, at FPL Stag for Anthony. And we're also on Instagram, WGTA.FPL. So, Mr. Stag, Anthony, how are you doing? What's on the agenda for this edition of the pod?
Evening, lads. There's been an awful lot of changes for me. I've never lived in a world where Liverpool were league champions, and it almost feels like I've never lived in a world where I didn't have a crap game week. But both of those things have occurred this week, so it's been kind of enjoyable. So this week, as per the new running order, we're going to start off with our own game week review, and then we'll move on to the market forces. And then, bearing in mind, of course, that we only have stats for two game weeks, so we can't use those to conclude like a huge amount. And strategically, people are all over the shop at this point. We're going to just do our best to focus on forwards at all the different price points and give you a good look at that area, because that seems to be, especially given the Aguero and Aubameyang sales that are going on, the place where people are focusing their attention at the moment. And we've noted, of course, in previous pods that there are an abundance of options here as well, because they're just every player brings their own questions, really, and their own baggage. There are form questions of the likes of Aubameyang, team questions for the likes of Pookie, and then some teams are perhaps on the beach. And then, look, as per usual, we'll move on to our listener questions. We'll reveal our own teams and we'll put it through our captaincy thoughts as well. But let's get on to the game week reviews.
Yeah, let's start at the bottom then. Start with me. So, yes, 70 this week. I feel like FPL Stag approximately a week ago. It's a bit weird, isn't it, saying 70? Yeah, that was a bad game week. But it kind of was, because for whatever reason, it just didn't work out. Like, I just kind of was watching throughout the whole kind of few days of action. It just never felt like anything happened for me. Like, I was watching Man United play, and Bruno, who was my captain, just every time the ball was being played forward, it didn't seem to go anywhere near him. Like, he wasn't even picked up when passes were being played. And there was one moment when Maguire had it in the net, and it was a Bruno assist, Maguire goal. I had both players and got ruled out. That kind of epitomised my game week, really. So he blanked. And then tonight as well, Aubameyang blanked. I think those are the two kind of big players that I really needed to come through this week. They just didn't at all. So yeah, 70 overall. Highlights being Liverpool backline, Van Dijk and TAA coming through, Jimenez, Salah. I mean, these are all players that are owned by everybody. So the fact that they all did something, but none of my other players did anything, meant that it was just a net little red arrow, basically. So basically just doing nothing. Sad, but there we go. There's always next game week, which is in 2 days' time. Stark, how do you do?
A little better, Tom, but not as good as Nick, which is just fine by me. I'm quite happy to be in the middle of the two of you for once, as opposed to just rock bottom. So I only had three players blank. So to kind of be somewhat disappointed or not overjoyed is kind of bizarre. So the three players that I had that blanked were Alex McCarthy, who I think arguably should nearly have had an assist for Nicosia's goal, Bruno Fernandes, Tom, you've dealt with, and then it was Mason Mount, who's kind of my differential player at this point, but I think I need to perhaps think about changing him up. My two transfers were selling Jack Grealish and Aubameyang. Pretty happy with that. I brought in Rashford and I brought in Fernandes. Okay, one of them worked, one of them didn't. Captained Rashford. So it's 85 points overall with a hit in there, so 81 net. There's nothing all that interesting about the players that I had that scored. I would say they're all relatively template, except for maybe Charlie Taylor and Harry Maguire, who both got six. So it's okay. I'm happy with it. It's better than normal at this point. So we'll move on. And Nick?
Yeah, so this week I got 94 points, which I'm pretty happy with my wild cards and how it's turned out. Yeah, worked out very, very well. The only two players Tom mentioned already that blanked for my team were Fernandes and Aubameyang, who got a two-pointer, which was rubbish. But the rest of the team did really, really well. All five of my back line got clean sheets, so a nice 10-pointer in goal from Nick Pope. Mason Holgate, yeah, with a 7-pointer. Trent Alexander-Arnold, 14, size 6, and Soyuncu, 8. Mane and De Bruyne did the business in midfield. And Rashford got a couple of assists up front. And Jimenez, my captain, got 18 points. So, yeah, finally hitting the top 100K for the first time this season. So that's quite pleasing to see. So, yeah, very happy with that.
Yeah, awesome. That's two really, really good weeks in a row for you, isn't it? And in contrast, for me scoring 160, I think you've scored over 200, haven't you, in 2 weeks, which is really damn good. So yeah, a fantastic restart for you, really getting into it. And to further your excitement, Nick, we're going to start off tonight's pod with Market Forces. Know you love doing it. As Stag mentioned earlier on, that's going to be the way we're going to pivot into our main kind of talking point this week, which is the forward focus. But before we get caught in all that, let's look at the market forces first and kind of see how the market is reacting to all the events of the game we've just gone.
Yeah, sure. So, time for market forces, where we look at the movers and shakers in the market, see who's rising, see who's falling. Yeah, as Tom said, a long time since I've done one of these. So, great to be back looking at the numbers again. And, the most transferred in player this week, no surprises really, is Anthony Martial, with 130,000 transfers in at time of recording. So, obviously, this guy just netted a hat-trick. It's apparently the first hat-trick for Manchester United since the Alex Ferguson era, which I couldn't believe when I saw that statistic. Absolutely mental there. But great week for Martial owners. I know there's a few on Twitter later as a captain to him. So yeah, great call there. Unfortunately, yeah, I sold him as part of my unlimited transfers wild card. So yeah, it was a bit painful sort of jumping on the Fernandes wagon. But looking like a great pick there. Lots of people obviously now with Manchester United's fixtures jumping on that wagon. Otherwise, in terms of midfielders, Traore, Adama Traore, sort of fourth most transferred in midfield player at this moment in time with 49,000 transfers in, time of recording. A lot of interest in the Pacey Wolves winger, who's got a couple of assists in the last couple of weeks, linking it very well with Raul Jimenez there. So, at his price range, I think he's only about 5.7 or some 5.8. A lot of people were clearly interested in him. And I suppose the midfielder that's being sold is Jack Grealish. He's the second most transferred out player at this moment in time. 80,000 transfers out for Jack Grealish. Obviously, a lot of people looking at him when the unlimited transfers came into play because of the double game week for Aston Villa, but that's now three blanks in a row for Grealish, not doing much at all. And with some tough fixtures coming up for Aston Villa, sort of Wolves, Liverpool, Manchester United, people are finally getting rid of this guy.
Another pretty interesting thing that I'm seeing in the transfers out is just how fickle the FPL community can be, in that Lundstrom, Baldock, John Egan, Dean Henderson are all amongst the most sold defenders and goalkeepers, which is pretty hilarious. And then another theme that I'm kind of noting is that you're seeing a few of the expensive strikers being sold, as you noted, Nick, but then it's just, I guess it just indicates who is playing well at the moment, but it's all, you know, upper mid-tier / low elite tier players that are being brought in. So the likes of the ones you named, your Rashfords, your Jimenezes, your Tony Martials, and maybe your Heung-Min Sons type. But all it seems to be the hub of the transfers is in midfielders and forwards.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, John Lundstrom, fifth most transferred out player at this moment in time, 32,000 transfers out. Sheffield United just generally seem to be struggling a little bit since the football resumed through injuries and various other reasons. So a lot of people jumping off that wagon. But yeah, I guess the talking point is all about the forwards, isn't it? With Aguero being injured, he's the most transferred out player right now with 135,000 transfers out. And a couple other premium strikers who haven't done very well, Vardy and Aubameyang, both not scored. 70,000 transfers out for Vardy. Aubameyang has had 50,000 transfers out at the time of recording. But the players being brought in, the forwards being brought in, a couple of them made sense to me. Rashford, 108,000 transfers in, second most transferred in player. Jimenez, obviously, 84,000 transfers in. But Kane, reaching that top five most transferred in players with 46,000 transfers in. That one surprised me a little bit. Just the guy did score, but it was a five-point haul. It was less than what Dan Burn scored this game week, to give a little bit of context, you know. It wasn't that amazing, was it? And Spurs don't have brilliant fixtures, but clearly people jumping on the Kane wagon there at 10.9 million. I don't know. I guess we'll talk about it a little bit later. I don't know what you think about that.
That's bizarre, isn't it? I think there's an element of the fact that if you look at the names of the players who are being sold, Aubameyang, Aguero, and to a lesser extent Vardy, people suddenly have a lot of money. And what they do, they look to the most expensive player and use price as a heuristic for like value, basically, which is totally wrong. That's obviously not what we'd advise most of the time. But hey, you know, maybe there are some people who have got a particular love for Harry Kane. You're probably going to guess what we're all going to say when we get round to him, but there you go. But yeah, it does look like, just to move us on to the main topic, there is a lot of kind of manoeuvring in the transfer market surrounding forwards at the moment. And I guess that has led us to kind of think, well, let's have a look at the forwards this week, because as Anthony said earlier on, we've got limited time. So we're led by the market forces in some ways. And this looks like a pretty good subject to go into, because over the next day and a half before the next deadline, I'm sure a lot of people are going to be deliberating, you know, what the hell do I do if I'm looking to sell Aubameyang, looking to move Aguero on, or maybe just looking to rejig and maybe look around the forward sort of area. So yeah, just a caveat as well here, we're going to be using a blend of assumptions, the last two game weeks data, and a few other little bits and pieces from the eye test to make our judgments. We trust you're able to understand that we're using a limited data set. So I guess to start off with, why are forwards important this year? Most forwards this year are, of course, talisman. More than half of the top 20 by percentage of team points scored pre-lockdown were forward talisman. Nine of the top 10 talisman by this measure were forward. So Pukki, Ings, Aubameyang, Rashford were the top four. Then you have Richarlison. Then you had Jimenez, Vardy, Wood, IU, and Calvert-Lewin. Yes, IU was ninth, actually, incredibly enough. It shows how little Crystal Palace have actually scored going forward. But only 20% of our teams could be strikers, and it's kind of disproportionate, and that you see that kind of year on year. But one really interesting point that I did fish out to show the kind of how important forwards can be, bearing in mind all that talisman stuff, is that before lockdown, 23,192 points were scored. Only 16% of them were scored by forwards, actually. 42% scored by midfielders, 33% by defenders, and 9% by goalkeepers. But looking at how that marries up with the talisman data, it's clear that the quality of points that are scored by forwards is really important. Not all points, I guess, are created equally. And this year, particularly, forwards are getting the FPL points, which are of most interest to us as managers. They're the ones which are attacking points that make a difference to our overall rank, not the appearance. The clean sheets, arguably, but not the appearance of those sort of more functional points as such. This trend has continued too, by the way, which we'll talk about when we get to Jimenez. But it's not always been the case, has it, Nick? I mean, last season, for example, it wasn't a bonanza of forwards. And in some ways, we're looking at how best to write off the third forward option, weren't we?
Yeah, that was certainly the case that I was trying to argue last season when I was, you know, talking about the concept of the death of the third striker. And to be honest, I do feel that I was vindicated in my opinions from that season, the previous season before that. And that it was illustrated in the metrics. I mean, there weren't too many forwards that were really catching the eye last season. Perhaps Jimenez was the one that did emerge out of the shadows, a new player to the Premier League that really, really impressed. But besides, if you exclude, you know, your premium guys, the guys that always deliver and very expensive FPL assets, obviously the likes of Aguero, you weren't really looking at a large subset of players or available guys that, you know, were actually doing much at all. We had the likes of Troy Deeney, the likes of Glenn Murray, and obviously Tom's favourite from the time, Rondon. And these guys never really did much at all. And They were like priced at 6.5 million, often 7 million. And when you compared those guys to what some of the defenders were offering, for instance, last season, we had a Matt Doherty at 4.4 million who outscored all of those players that I just mentioned, the cheaper forwards. It kind of vindicated that argument that you could have like a back four and go for almost like a 4-4-2 lineup, which I actually spent most of my season with.
Definitely, it's interesting how it swings per season, like, in terms of prominence of certain positions. And certainly this year, as I've mentioned, it's definitely been a bit of a contrast between last season's sort of interesting way of trying to fill the third forward position and this season, where we would love to have a fourth forward spot, let's face it. We were asked an interesting question on this as well. So Cy, FPL Heroes and Villains, says, you know, compare Dominic Calvert-Lewin to VVD. Who wins? Is there still a case for two forwards this year, using all of that kind of logic that you mentioned earlier on?
Yeah, I definitely think there is a case for two forwards this year. And you can easily... One aspect sort of outside of what forwards score is what you do with that extra slot. So as I said about the depth of first striker, this year there are a few more players that are emerging. But, you know... For instance, just this week, there's only been five forwards that have actually scored compared to the countless numbers of defenders who got clean sheets, which a clean sheet is 4 points, a forward goal is 4 points. Obviously, you might factor bonus points into there and a few other things. But the only players that scored were Nketiah, Dwight Gayle, Jay Rodriguez, and then Kane and Jimenez. No one else, no other forwards scored anything. But countless defenders got clean sheets, for instance. Roman Sice, one of my men, if he was a forward, Wolves have had six clean sheets in seven games. If he was a forward, that would be the equivalent of six goals in seven games, and everyone would be bringing this guy in. But obviously they're not, because you know, people always look at the players who have scored and the forwards, as opposed to the defenders and their clean sheets. So perhaps the DCL to Virgil van Dijk thing is a little bit of a misdirection, as it's a rare example of a forward perhaps that's quite good value, but they are the same price. And if you look at root score, I would definitely say Virgil was better value still than DCL, because he's actually scored 41 points more than him. And in Virgil van Dijk, there's only actually three forwards in the game that have scored more than him this season: Jimenez, Vardy and Aubameyang, and two of them we've just seen being heavily sold, because forwards are the ones that we're constantly selling in and out all the time, aren't we? We're always transferring our forwards because we can never decide. And the other thing about forwards is there's only feels like there's about 10 options in the forward line that are really actual genuine picks, and even that feels like a bit of a stretch, considering one of the top 10 scoring forwards in the games right now is Pukki, who's only had two returns in the last 14 games. And then, yeah, the final point I thought I'd make, even though it's coming across a bit of a rant, is Diego Jota. Do you know what? He's currently being outscored by one of our jokes on the pod, Connor Cody. Connor Cody.
Not the effort cap.
Is outscoring Jota right now. And even though we called him overpriced because he was 5 million, but he's still outscoring the guy. Even Federico Fernandez, apparently, who didn't even play in the 10 opening fixtures, is doing better than Jota, which is... quite interesting to see.
All right, so zero value in the forward, says Nick. So let's end the podcast there.
Who got the assist?
Right, really though, there is still obviously a lot of action going on. Although, as you know, as you mentioned, Nketiah or Greenwood are obviously great options of seven for eight forwards. Maybe the likes of Foden might be that kind of fifth midfielder you're talking about. But there are lots of key individuals sort of going on around the kind of forward category. And it's good to know that, and now let's kind of dive into them. Anything to bear in mind though before we do, like, does rest or rotation, Anthony, play a role in decision making, you know, targeting the opposition like we spoke about last week? Because there are quite a few players that we're going to talk about, like Rashford, like Jimenez, who definitely do have that kind of fixture as well as form element to what they offer.
So I've been thinking about this, the rest question in particular, because I think it's easy for people to see the truncated calendar that we have and to get quite concerned that players are going to be rotated, etc. And okay, sure, if you're following Manchester City, you'd be quite concerned. But let's say going forward, because what's the point in looking back? What's interesting about this particular game week is that there's actually like a huge gap in tough time, which is like something we haven't necessarily become particularly used to, for an awful lot of the teams have actual time to rest. So aside from a few teams who are playing in the FA Cup, those being Arsenal, Chelsea, Leicester, Manchester United, Manchester City, Newcastle, Norwich, and Sheffield United. Like all the rest of the teams have a week rest after this, so it's there isn't the same concern that we usually have. And looking at those FA Cup fixtures, even you might say Leicester and Chelsea is the only spicy fixture, and you might say that Arsenal are the only team who may play a strong team against Sheffield United. I think the other sides, your Uniteds, for example, who you might be worried about resting another day playing Norwich. Come on, like they have a whole second tier set of forwards that they can put on, and if they need to reinforce it during the game, that's fair enough. So I think you could be worried about rest as much as you like, but I don't think it's a bigger factor than usual at this moment, and I don't think that you should be too concerned about it going forward either. And whether your opposition has got the rest or doesn't either, it kind of seems like one of those nebulous distractions that it's very easy to get your spreadsheets up and get your, you know, oh, 2 days and 17 hours between games. Oh no, the defenders have 2 days and 18 hours. We're going to get so worried, but it doesn't matter. And then targeting opposition, like, yeah, like there are five really crap teams in this division at the moment. Since the restart, the bottom five have played 11. They've won absolutely none. They've drawn three of them, and two of those I think were by Villa. They've lost eight then, obviously, the remainder. They've scored three, and they've conceded 14. Like obviously you target them, and it's no different any other season, but I think we've got a particularly poor and out of form, it might be worth adding, bottom five here.
Yep, certainly makes sense. There is a good spreadsheet by Ben Quellen actually looking at the rest schedules, but I just wouldn't get too worried. And I'd also kind of think about confirmation bias a little bit, like, am I reading this just to confirm my own biases? Because as Anthony says, look at the other side of it. The opposition also may have less time to rest too, which I'll come on to with my captain pick right at the end of the pod. But yeah, it's ridiculous. And equally ridiculous is how badly that kind of bottom five are. As we said last week, I think that two of them are going to stay up just by dint of, well, obviously Norwich are down, but a couple of them are just going to stay up just by dint of being less worse than the rest. It's not about them being better, it's about them being less worse. That is pretty crazy. So starting off then with the forwards though, I guess in terms of the market forces, we're seeing a lot of Rashford action. I mean, he got two assists, didn't he, this weekend for Martial. And yeah, I mean, he's only had one shot on target in the two games that we've seen so far back. But he does have the highest XA of any other forward of 0.99, obviously. As I mentioned, he made two for Martial last game. I guess his time will come. He's had 14 touches in the box, second to Firmino in the last two. He's had the most entries into the box as well, according to FF Hub stats. Great fixtures, Brighton, Bournemouth, Villa, Southampton, Crystal Palace, West Ham, Leicester. Given how crap Leicester looks, none of those are a worry. I mean, he could well be a really interesting pick for a lot of people. Like, he's certainly top of the list for me once I do sell Aubameyang eventually, to be that replacement.
That's quite interesting because I own Rashford and captained Rashford in the last game week. So I enjoyed the two assists and wish that he'd taken, I guess, the one big chance that he really had in the game. I think he only had one big chance per the stats as well, but he really had one good chance and didn't really take it. But I think with Rashford, the problem is that you have that other option, which is Martial, who's a million less. He's a midfielder, so he gets more for his goals. Rashford no longer takes penalties all the time, let's say. There's a bit of uncertainty about what that particular Football.London article meant, where Fernandez said that if the second penalty in the previous game, that Rashford would have taken it. But does this mean that they're rotating it, or does that just mean that Fernandez doesn't like taking two penalties in one game, in which case, it's a once-in-a-season type of problem. So in doing that, I've thought about Rashford a bit more long term, and I've looked at the last 10 appearances that each of Rashford and Martial made before the break. And okay, Rashford does have better stats and involvement overall, but they're both equally as active in the box. And I guess when it comes to goals scored, that's the thing that really matters. Rashford was ahead on goals in that particular period, but he was helped by penalties. So for a million less, Martial is really putting him under pressure where it really matters. Now, if Rashford had the penalties, I think you'd edge towards him. And this is speaking as someone that owns Rashford, by the way. Like, given that we're about to maybe go through in detail, but as we've said already, there are so many other forward options. Like, I think having a 5 to 6.5 million forward and combine him with Anthony Martial is probably better than having Rashford with, let's say, your 6 million-ish alternative, your Grealish, maybe Pulisic in fairness. But outside of that, it's not a particularly good option. So like, based on the value, I think it's Martial that you'd be thinking about picking up instead of Rashford. But if you have Rashford, you're probably not going to sell him.
Yeah, I've got Rashford. He came in on my wild card. And certainly I think he is one of the standout picks right now in the forward line. I don't think there is a great deal of options out there, to be honest, to spend the money on. And I noted that when I was sort of looking in terms of my cash cow Aubameyang, in terms of who I replace him with, when I looked to perhaps disinvest after the Norwich game, and I had sort of this sort of 9 million or 8.9 million, which felt like a very sort of awkward price point in that forward line. And I couldn't really see anyone that caught my eye outside the players I already had. And going to minutes in a minute, but Rashford was the other forward I had, and I think he is definitely one of the standout picks just because of those Manchester United fixtures and his form. Obviously he was injured, and you know, we can't really look too much in detail in terms of the stats because obviously everything that's happened, but this was basically his breakout season. You know, before this season he hadn't really done too much, but this season he's got sort of 14 goals to his name, which is by far his record, and 7 assists. And that Manchester United team really starting, especially with Fernandes joining, really starting to look very free-throwing and, you know, very prominent. And yeah, those United fixtures, basically, they don't play any of the traditional top six up until the end of the season now, do they? So I think they've got Brighton, Bournemouth, Villa, Southampton, Crystal Palace, West Ham look like a team you can easily triple up on. And if, you know, Martial's looking pressing a lot, but you can get Martial, Fernandes, Rashford, and that would be quite an aggressive Manchester United lineup. But, you know, it easily understandable considering the fixtures and the way they played. And they basically tore apart Sheffield United as well.
Yeah, they're very good. And I think we've got some questions on kind of the optimal triple later on with Manchester United. But well, I take both your points. I think it kind of sounds like you both own, and Nick's more about kind of the fixtures, whereas Anthony, it sounds like you're kind of a bit regretful, really, of owning Rashford, and kind of wish you'd gone to Martial instead. It feels like kind of don't sell is what you're saying about Rashford.
It's not that. I think it's more I'm just wondering if I had, let's say, about 16 million to spend. But if I put 8 million into your Tony Martial, and then I've 9 million to put into a striker, like, I think I can do something kind of interesting there outside that with the rest of my squad. Let's say maybe actually have Salah and Mane again, for example. Those are the sort of funds that make a difference. And when you've got DCL, Jimenez, Ings, all these cheaper options available in the forward line, not to mind your Nketias and your Greenwoods, who are, look, they're good value for what they are, as a third striker option. You do wonder, like, there are some, you could get a really, really powerful 4 midfield/5 midfield if you really wanted to, if you save that money, that Rashford and Martial would be part of that 5.
Sure. All right. Now, I mean, I do, that's where you're coming from. I do quite like Rashford, though. It's really interesting to see also that Rashford and Martial's ownership's now shooting up towards Rashford. So it was kind of, I think, 7% last week. And now, since the hat trick, that's doubled. He's now up to 12.6% right now. And Rashford's up to 18%, so I expect both of them to be very, very similar before long, and I expect you're going to probably find that one's not going to be much of a differential way or the other. So it's more just kind of which one fits your team structure, perhaps, because maybe you might want a Mahrez, as you mentioned, Stag, and then you have a free striker slot, so then logically Rashford fits into that, obviously, rather than having to try Jimmy around. Maybe you might not want Jesus, who we're going to speak about in a minute, but you have mentioned another guy, Jimmy, honest Jimmy. As I mentioned earlier on, at the moment the forwards actually haven't scored that many points. He's actually the highest scoring forward since the restart with 17 points, but unfortunately that's not particularly great. So just to give you some context, that's actually level with Fabinho as the 7th highest point scorer, and he's been outscored by the likes of Matt Ritchie, Phil Foden, Michael Keane, which highlights how any conclusions drawn on 2 weeks' data are questionable at best. But nevertheless, Jimmy's talismanic qualities are clear to see. 0.9 XG, 2 goals scored, the postman of FPL. He's entering a level of dependency that's increasingly seeing him entering the captaincy conversation. Indeed, Nick, this week you did put the caps on Honest Jim, didn't you? It is honest work, but he's going to get through it for you, isn't he?
Yeah, certainly he has proved himself as a solid pick, and, you know, D is the talisman, the anchorman in that Wolves team, and you know, that Wolves team have been brilliant this season, haven't they? And that's partly down to the honest work that Jimenez has been putting in, the shift he's been putting in each game. We don't see many hauls from the guy, unfortunately. The sort of the double figure return is quite rare. There's only been three so far this season, and one of them was 13, and the highest of those was 13 points. So it's not often that you see the massive returns from the guy, but you know, he's just so consistent, isn't he? I know we're sort of talking mainly about the last couple of game weeks. He scored in both those games, but before that as well, he was banging them in, 15 goals to his name. And just in terms of the underlying metrics we've seen over the course of the season, he's been top for forwards for shots, top for forwards on shots on target, tops for chances created as well, 16 assists to his name, so he's not selfish either. I think only Vardy, in terms of goals and assists combined, has done more than him this season. So yeah, very, very good season for him. And certainly, I think, a key element to our FPL teams.
I think what's interesting about Jimenez, and it's something that maybe is probably concerning people if they don't have him, but like, why don't you have him, is kind of as a shield pick at minimum. But he's actually had 5 shots since the return of football. That's less than the likes of Greenwood, Maupay, James Ward-Prowse. And I guess as a player that, as you've noted, Nick, had more shots than anyone else in the league, or any forward at least, it's quite interesting that he's had such a marked drop-off, considering Wolves have had quite good fixtures. And I'm wondering, is that a systemic thing? Is that a Jimenez thing? Is it just, it's 2 games, you can't draw much conclusions from the data type thing? Hard to know, of course, but worth looking at and certainly worth ignoring for now. But keep in mind, perhaps.
Yeah, definitely. I think either way, the key question is, if you don't own him, why not, effectively? You know, quite a few of the algorithms are now saying that he's probably the captain du jour for next week because of Aubameyang's drop-off. And you know, there are great fixtures coming up: Aston Villa, Arsenal, Sheffield United, Everton, Burnley, Crystal Palace and Chelsea. None of them are worrying for Jimenez and Wolves. And there's no FA Cup as well. So they've got a decent amount of rest between fixtures, if that is something that worries you. So, for example, they've got 5.5 days. That extra half a day is really important, guys, between Aston Villa and Arsenal. So yeah, Jimenez, honest man, buy him in. Let's move on elsewhere to a few more esoteric picks, shall we say, because I mean, say you got a Jimenez and say you're looking at Rashford to fill that kind of forward slot for United, that's probably 2. I think it goes without saying that we've all got Jimenez, and I think that I'm guessing all of you who are listening also got Jimenez. So speaking around to more other forward options, there are, things start to get a little bit more dicey, don't they? I mean, to start off with Tammy and Giroud, because we don't know which one you'd get, and that in of itself means that it's an avoid. You should probably be looking at Azpilicueta, Pulisic, Mount, whatever, just putting it in somewhere else. But, I mean, they do enter the conversation, don't they? Because the fixtures are quite good: West Ham, Watford, Crystal Palace, Sheffield United and Norwich in the next 5. And they did just beat Man City to hand Liverpool the title. Does the rotation just mean there are no?
Yes, the rotation does mean, I think, that there are no. And especially when you consider that Pulisic, if anything, seems to be getting the better chances of them as well.
Excellent. Put that in the bin and move on then. It's one of those things that we have to mention it because everyone would be like, why didn't you talk about the Chelsea strikers? Well, that's why not. Moving on to someone else we should be talking about, Kane. Brackets WTF. So it was a fantastic finish from the defensive midfielder from Sonsball last game, as Nick noted, for that massive 5-point haul. I think that's probably the biggest abuse of the word haul I've ever heard, actually. But there are a few things that actually recommend him. Yeah, I know. I'm aware of banter, Nick. There are a few data points, actually, that do recommend Kane, funnily enough. I did have to scrabble around for them. But since the restart, he's actually got the second highest XG with 1.38. More pie is actually first with 1.42, but 0.75 of that is a pen. So in reality, Kane's XG non-pen is actually the highest of any forward since the restart, i.e. 2 games data, guys. But is he value for money at 10.9? He'll play. His ownership is now 11.2%, so a little bit of a differentiator. And he'll play. He'll definitely play. He'll play 90 minutes. Is that enough? Is that really enough? Come on. What do you guys think?
If I wanted dependable, you know, 5 or 6 point performances at the moment, I'd probably go for a Manchester United defender or a Wolves defender like Saïss.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I think Harry Kane is probably going to get a few goals, and we'll probably see maybe 5 or 6 up until the end of the season from him. I think he's going to continue to score. But at 10.9 million for 5 or 6 goals, I think that's just probably, you know, better value options out there. You know, maybe something like Calvert-Lewin, you get an extra 4.5 million to bolster your midfield and upgrade some players and stuff. So I think if from a Spurs perspective, I think there's other picks like Son that I would probably recommend over Kane at this moment in time.
There you go. It's almost like, again, 2 weeks' data, very difficult to judge anything from. So while we're in the sort of Neverland of bizarre picks, one man has come up in question. So Charles Hazel, your mum's Athletic, asked, Jesus, trap or the second coming? I guess the abiding mantra for years and years in FPL has been, if one of Man City strikers is out, get the other one. However, Pep, of course, clearly delights in being a massively unpredictable human being. I mean, he did suggest in his press conference no one could play every game and that Raz or even Hunderhan could play the number nine. This evening, I think Sterling won the Pep Roulette to be the number nine. So, yeah, but you know what you're getting into if you buy a player like Jesus. He's 3.9% owned and he is creeping into the market for us with the Kun knock. So there are a lot of people who are looking at him using that kind of old-fashioned mantra. There is one kind of very, very big positive in Jesus's favour, which is his data per start. So whenever he starts, his XG is a massive 0.9 or has been over the course of the season. Over the course of the season as well, his points per game has been a massive 5.64. So there is definitely maybe some relevance in owning Jesus if you are looking for that. And that's according to FanTuber Hub, that is. But the key factor, the key drawback with Jesus is if we're going down the route of risky Man City picks, Mahrez at 8.5 million, cheaper than Jesus, has 6 double-digit hauls this season, the most of any player. And he's also got 8.5 points per 90 versus Jesus' 6.3. So, yeah, I think that Jesus would be literally just a differential if you were going for him in answer to Charles's question. I can see why you would, but I think that you'd probably be better off going for Mahrez in your midfield than going for something else in that attacking option if you can do it that way around. But obviously it may just be how your squad is set up. What do you guys reckon on Jesus then? Is he the second coming, Nick?
Well, it kind of goes back to that conversation we had on the other pod when we talked about Lacazette as well, and neither of them can buy starts at the moment. So even with Aguero out, Jesus still didn't start the game, did he? And that is obviously concerning when you're looking at who you're buying in your forward line at 9.6 million again. I'm not going to be bringing in a guy at 9.6 million that I can't trust to start. But, you know, you made an interesting point about Manchester City. It seems to be Mahrez that seems to be Pep's favourite at the moment, playing every game. But, you know, we don't know. He fielded 1-11 for one game and basically a totally different 11 bar Edison and Mahrez for that second game. But with City, right until the end of the season, after that Liverpool game, 33-38, they've got a fantastic run of fixtures. Surely Jesus is going to get some game time in those games. And, you know, you can certainly see him getting a few goals in those games as well. So if you fancy a bit of a gamble, a bit of a differential, you know, take that punt and go for it. But don't be upset if he doesn't start, because he can't be trusted to play every game, can he?
Hey, look, put it this way to maybe finish up on Jesus, because I think we've probably given him more than he's worth already. City play Liverpool this coming game week, miles into the future on July 2nd, but this coming game week. And then they do have that FA Cup fixture as well. So we've got two extra things to, let's say, consider Jesus based on. He could be injured. Maybe one of the other two that Pep named, Gundogan or Sterling, could be injured. Anything could happen with Jesus, but he's not going to be coming in ahead of this game week. And I think with that in mind, I think we can kind of can that one and move on to the next, which I think will be Aubameyang. And this is kind of a controversial one. I think this is probably the most controversial question in the FPL world right now, because the fact of the matter is that it's been pretty damn disappointing since the football returned. But he plays Norwich, and Norwich have been even more disappointing since the football returned.
Yep, it was really interesting tonight, and it also reinforced the fact that two people can watch a game of football and come away with a completely different conclusion. Because I watched that game, and someone like Neil Murray also watched this game, and we both kind of said, I said it, and he said it to me as well on Twitter. Yep, I'm absolutely fine with captaining him against Norwich this week. And other people were saying, he was so bad, I'm selling him straight away. In fact, I've just sold him, that here's my team, I've sold him. Amazing, absolutely incredible the amount of difference in opinion you get from the eye test. And you know, the fact of the matter is the guy was through on goal 3 times. The first time, there was an amazing save by McCarthy. He probably should have scored. Second time, yeah, he fell over. And the third time, it was a dog save. Like, he got pulled back by Jack Stevens, wasn't it? Who got a red card, yep. Right? So, I mean, another day, that's two or three goals perhaps. I just think it was very unlucky.
Especially with his usual chance conversion stats, etc., that we've talked about before. Yeah.
Exactly. And then you got Norwich next. I mean, it's one of those things, damned if you do, damned if you don't now, because I've held him for this game, Southampton, literally inches away from being vindicated for doing so. I mean, Nick, you're a fellow owner. What do you reckon? You're holding, right? Yeah. Are you going to captain him as well?
Yeah, I mean, potentially. I think it's between him and Jimenez. I'm certainly not going to be selling him at home to Norwich. And yet, I took the same takeaway from watching the game as you. He was very unlucky not to get a return. It seems to be indicative of his performances in the last couple of games, because if he in the Southampton game as well, he was creating lots of chances, got a number of shots off, but didn't. I think it was an offside goal as well, wasn't it, in one of the games? But he just didn't. It didn't happen for him, unfortunately. So yeah, very frustrating as an owner to see a player like Aubameyang blank, especially when he is the most expensive, probably second most expensive player in my team. But he also got the lowest score in my team. He's the only player in my team that got 2 points or less. So you know, it feels a bit, you know, odds to then go ahead and captain the lowest scoring player, but he perhaps is the most explosive player in my team as well. And, you know, I'm not going to pick one of the Liverpool City guys for that crunch match. So he does look like the standout captain, apart from perhaps Jimenez. But yeah, he is going to stay in my team. And just judging from the sort of our conversation, there hasn't been a single case made for any other forward apart from Jimenez and Rashford, who are already owned. So I don't even know who I'd sell him for anyway at this point, apart from perhaps investing the money elsewhere into midfield or defence.
Yeah, I've just hope for the best. Let's move on to what we're going to do, just to say, obviously, there are people like Vardy out there who didn't mention. He's being sold by a lot of people. I'm sure he's going to bite you at some point. Calvert-Lewin, I think I still own him. He's had more shots on target than any other player since the restart. But maybe Aubameyang might have more now.
DCL had more shots than anyone in Game Week 31, so doubt it.
Yeah. Still does. Okay. And then you've got Ings as well, still hanging around. Didn't score against Arsenal tonight, surprisingly. I think he captained himself on the FPL I saw. But yeah. Never mind, Danny. Right. So what are we doing? It sounds like, Nick, you absolutely hate the strikers. I'm guessing you're just going with Jimenez and Katie and Greenwood, right? Just sacking it all off. No, I know you've got Aubameyang as well. But is that how you're going to stay?
I've got the jar.
What are you going to do?
Yeah, I've got the jar.
The jar. A whiskey in the jar.
Yeah. I hate the strikers, but then I went for three strikers because there's three decent picks out there, which I thought stood out and were worth the investment. But if one of them drops off, you're left with very little. So, yeah, I mean, as I said already, Jimenez, Rashford, Aubameyang, they're staying in my team at least for next week. But after that, I might have to have a rethink in terms of Aubameyang, downgrade him and reinvest that money elsewhere, I think.
I'm sticking with what I'll christen the junior, the JN or Jimenez, Nketiah and Rashford. Look, as I said about Nketiah, I'm just going to keep him now with it being Norwich and I think he'll play. Rashford is good, Jimenez is good, and that's fine by me.
I'm kind of leaving it one more week, but I basically got Jimmy's a must, and the other two are kind of open spots to me at the moment. So I've got Aubameyang and Barnes that I really want to get rid of. I could also get rid of Calvert-Lewin as well if there's a third blank. So then I'm in an interesting position where I've got Aubameyang, Barnes and Calvert-Lewin who could go. Calvert-Lewin becomes Nketiah, then I could get Rashford and Mahrez, or I could get Jesus and Martial. So it's basically Jesus, Martial versus Rashford and Mahrez. I don't know at this point because I'm doing the transfer next week and I'm just not worried about price changes or anything like that because end of the day, it's too late now. But yeah, interesting position, interesting kind of option. And it's crazy as well, but it's created so much market activity for something that in some ways we all kind of were a bit sceptical on, to be honest. But there you go. Hopefully that helped you with your forward focus going forward if you're caught in the bind in this sort of way. And yeah, we'll take a break there and move on to the final section of today's pod.
Who got the assist?
Right, we're back and it's time to catch up with the mini league. And Stag, you have the numbers, don't you, this week? What's happening in the Who Got The Assist mini league? Who's top now? Any changes?
Actually, quite a lot of changes. And I think the bigger story with the league this week is more of collapses than it is of, you know, any major gains. Poor Mark Bird, I think, is the headline story. He's dropped from 6th to 36, courtesy of just 46 points this week. He basically had Alexander-Arnold, Kevin De Bruyne, Harry Kane captain, and a lot of blanks, which is particularly painful. And there have been a few others who have dropped out of the top 10 too. But I guess getting to the top 10 itself, Sean B, never forget, with 83 points on his wild card, so fair play. Luke Burgess has joined 10th with Lukewarm FC. He's down from 4th and getting 65 points with his wildcard team. Kane captaincy, I think, is the main issue there. FPL Lewis is 9th with Return of the Snag. He also wildcarded and captained Mane, so he got on just fine to 75 points. 7th is Ballon d'Origi, that was by Sam Oz FPL. He's on 1,981 points. He free-hitted and actually did quite well. He captained Rashford and he had Martinez, Chilwell, Alexander-Arnold, Doherty, and then the likes of Salah, Son and Rashford captain, along with Mr. Reliable Jimenez. 7th as well, joint is Neil Thompson, 1,981 points as well, obviously, with Salah captaincy. Nothing particularly outlandish in his team, except for perhaps Wan-Bissaka, who got 11 points, and I guess Pope, who had 10 for him. Up from 14th, I think it's the biggest gain in the top 10, is Adi Mansour. So up from 14th to 6th with 1,982 points with a free hit team. He's done quite well. So De Gea, Doherty, Van Dijk and Alexander-Arnold. So a bit like Tom there. Then he has Son, he captained Salah and he also had Jimenez and Rashford. So solid going there. 5th up from 6th is Andrej Dikos with 1,983 points. Pretty standard team as well there. Declan Rinn is up from 11th to 4th, which is a pretty good climb on his wildcard as well. He listened to us on the pod and brought in Matt Ritchie and Ibrahim Sarr and then has a relatively template normal team from there. In 3rd and maintaining position is Jake Gallagher, 73 points this week, so solid going again. In 2nd is Damir Defterijevic. He had 90 points this week, so not quite as good as Nick, but pretty solid going. He wildcarded as well, brought in Pope, had Alexander-Arnold, obviously, and then had a fairly standard team across the way from that. And then in 1st still is a good friend from Twitter, Mal Javery. He has wildcarded as well. He captained Salah on way to 88 points. Pope, Trent, Maguire, Doherty, Salah captain, Son. Dele Alli is an interesting aside in there. He's got Bruno Fernandes, Calvert-Lewin, Rashford and Jimenez as well. So pretty good going there, MJ.
Yeah, well done, MJ, yet again. See if you can close it out now and not real long to go. Right, let's move on to the questions. Thanks very much for the questions this week. Just to start off anyway with the obvious thing, which is United. The first question, let's combine the first two. The first question was generic Martial question. I'm sure you can guess. It says the caustic Adam Pritchard at 3-5 who and all-out United attack. So desperately seeking Dusan. Alan asks if we should bother with the defence at United given their attack and just go for a forward-facing threesome. And Rohan Pai are similar. Which three are the best? So yeah, Nick, you did start to kind of go into this earlier on, didn't you, in terms of maybe just saying, you know, that you might as well just get all three because that's probably the most aggressive way of putting things. Do you think that defence is worth considering? We saw Wan-Bissaka, for example, got an assist, did pretty well this week. But is it all about Martial, Rashford and Bruno? And how important is Martial in all this too?
Yeah, I do think the defence are strongly worth considering. I mean, we've said their fixtures before, but just looking at them again, I just can't see hardly any of those teams even scoring a goal against Manchester United. Like, so Brighton are not going to score, are they? Or, Bournemouth or Villa, Southampton, Sheffield United. There's going to be plenty of clean sheets in the next few games, provided De Gea doesn't make any more howlers or Maguire doesn't get turned on the ball or anything. You know, I am pretty confident in the defence and the likes of AWB, as you mentioned, he did pick up an assist as well. So, you know, there are the potential for the attacking returns. Maybe Maguire can get his slab head off on the ball off a corner, perhaps. So, I certainly think Manchester United triple up. Yeah, you know, I only have two actually, and I haven't figured out how to get a third in quite yet. But I certainly think the triple up, you know, definitely really, really good idea. But it is to use the parlance that I've used before, it's tough, isn't it, to kind of say who's best out of, you know, Bruno Fernandes. Well, he was on trend ultimately. He was a very, very trendy pick until this game week when Martial turns up with a hat-trick and now we're all kind of like, hey, which Manchester United player do we pick? Do we scrap Rashford? No, he got two assists as well. So I'm not going to say either way here. I'm not going to give an answer. I think it's down to your own team and your setups, and don't do the old Liverpool red roulette and start transferring out a player to bring in another one, because that ends up always, you know, you end up shooting yourself in the foot doing that kind of move. We've seen many times before with Liverpool players.
Yeah, I mean, the Red Roulette is exactly what came to mind when I was thinking about this question in general. Like, I think that, as you said earlier, there's a complete and obvious reason why you would, if you were on a wild card on a free hit, go for Martial, Bruno and Rashford. I mean, Martial is getting the majority of the big chances, actually, for United. And he's top of these. The fact that he's top of these also means that he's top for XG. As I noted last week, he wasn't very good for the Mourinho game. But for the sort of games he's got upcoming, yeah, he's going to be pretty damn good. 8 million as well. 8.1 by the time this goes out, I'm sure. I mean, on the other hand, you've got Bruno. And Bruno, I mean, I saw one article in One Paris this week that Bruno and Pogba could not play well together. I mean, it was one game, let's be fair. I think that'll need some time to develop, but Pogba's ability to move the ball forward, as highlighted by the Premier League panel account, alongside Bruno's incisiveness, I think will eventually work well. It just needs to build some familiarity. Anyone who's played a football manager or, you know, watched football will know that players need time to build that relationship. And Rashford needs to be more threat than provider. I did notice, I mentioned earlier, a lot of AWB rampaging, and Maguire as well had a goal ruled out, as I mentioned, the right at the top. I mean, basically, Martial, you know, if you've got a spot to fill, definitely buy him in. And I'd be looking for the triple attack to differentiate if I had a wild card. But two out of three of those is fine too. You know, I've got Maguire, so I'm going to keep him. And I'm probably going to have one of Rashford or Martial alongside Bruno, who I do own. You're just going to have to be braced some weeks of losing out on the Red Roulette, basically. I just think that's just me how it is. And if you are particularly worried about losing out, then get free. But that in itself does bring some disadvantages. So filling those spots with Man United players may mean that you can't buy other players then. All in the United, I think.
Yeah, I'll tie it up pretty quickly, but I used my transfers this week pretty much to complete my Man United spine. So I have all three of Maguire, Bruno Fernandes and Marcus Rashford. I'm quite content with it. I think that, obviously, to be honest, I really didn't consider Martial, especially after seeing the Spurs game. Initially, now I think I would. If I was in a different world, I might be trying to figure out a way to bring him in, but I'm going to stick with the spine I have. Also, just one person we didn't mention there was, well, in detail, I guess, was Pogba. He did create more chances than anyone else in the last game, just didn't quite happen to work out the right way for him. So, look, we know how explosive he can be as well, and perhaps he's somehow the uber differential in there, because everyone's flocking now to get Martial, having previously flocked to get Rashford, and having previously flocked also to get Bruno Fernandes. So, There are so many options there. It's nice to feel that way about Manchester United, because there were quite a few years where you were pretty much allergic to 90% of their squad.
Well, from an FPL perspective, given those price points, I think that it's also very nice to feel good about United. And the downside with Pogba is the fact that, one, those stunted little annoying run-ups and penalties won't be seen, because Bruno and also Rashford appear to be higher up in pecking order. So you're relying on... he's created four chances, he didn't take a single shot, right? Yep. So you're relying on assists with Pogba, so maybe you might be saying, well, Martial is 8.0, why wouldn't I just buy him, you know? But you're looking for differential here. I can see why you go there, but I think the case is fairly overwhelming with Martial. Let's move on to the next question, which is Sunset. So FPL Connect says when he was watching Spurs in possession, I identified that Davies was operating a third CB slot. Ah, oh, Ben Davies, how far you've fallen. And Son was supplying that width on the left rather than Davis. So Connect says he's far less dangerous than Kane, meaning is Son worth keeping for owners / still worth considering for non-owners? Nick, Spurs fan, what did you make of Son's performance, and do you think he's worth our consideration?
So I do remember actually when we had Josh at Distance Covered on the podcast, it was something that he actually highlighted when he came on, that Davies was dropping into sort of a back three, and this was allowing the likes of Serge Aurier, who played extremely advanced in that game. He was basically hugging almost like an attacking right winger, and Son was doing the same, as sort of almost like an attacking left winger, or perhaps a wing back. It would be a better way of describing both players. In terms of Aurier, it actually made me piqued my interest a little bit in terms of 5.0 million. I was surprised to see he had the third most assists out of all defenders over the course of the season. It's just a shame that Spurs have had hardly any clean sheets, isn't it? Otherwise, he would be a pick. And I don't actually rate him as a player either. He always gives the ball away, like, in dangerous positions, especially in that Manchester United game. It's like, oh, just get rid of it, Aurier. But that's beside the point. In terms of FPL, and back to the main crux of the question, with Son, I still think he's probably the best attacking pick at Spurs. I was starting to look at Bergwijn, but he didn't start. And so on, even though he was on the wing, he did actually pick up what would have been a goal had it not been for a very, very marginal offside. So that was quite unlucky in terms of attacking returns. And he also did pick up an assist, and he was looking pretty dangerous, even though he's on the wing. He cut inside and then get a few runs into the box and things like that. So I do still rate him as a decent pick. I think he created three chances as well, which was top five for midfielders in that game week. And I do really like Son as a pick, even though I'm still a bit sceptical about the Spurs fixtures that are coming up.
I'd look at him, and I think he is a luxury differential given the price point. But the issue with him was the average position. So I had a look at the heat map on SofaScore. I did watch the game. And for me, he's so far wide compared to the central role we need to see him in, or at least cutting inside to be a realistic FPL asset. But I'm a little bit worried about him. I definitely, if I was an owner, be thinking it's cause of concern. And as non-owner, I'm kind of a little bit put off. It's kind of like Leroy Sané syndrome, where the manager is forcing him to go flankwards to provide width where we actually want them as FPL managers to be cutting inside like a surgeon. Hopefully it's because Bergwijn didn't play, because I noticed that Lucas was tracking inside more often, and Son was the one who's providing width, and Bergwijn, when he played, was the one providing width. So maybe that's just a case of personnel that were being used. You know, Lucas last year used a centre forward on occasion as well, so I think he does naturally do that, and Son also naturally does do that. But it looks like Mourinho said, right, Sonny, you go wing, Lucas, you pull in a little bit more. Maybe it's just a case of formation being used. And so if Dido, maybe you'd be holding out to hope that Bergwijn and Son are the two kind of wingers. But yeah, as a non-owner, I'm a little bit less interested now. I mean, I was kind of on the side. If I had a wild card and I didn't use the UT, obviously I went for free hit. But if I did have a wild card, I'd maybe be interested in throwing him in as a little differential. But he is a bit of a luxury differential for me, and that money, as we've spoken about a lot, is abundantly better spent in other places, such as United midfielders. Right, next question then. Is Big at the Back back? So FPL Goops, similar to James Crotter's question last week, asked, with clean sheets aplenty, who do you recommend to include in take four of the Big at the Back incarnation?
I'll drop some stats initially, and I think so. We're starting to see that the Premier League is echoing a particular trend that we saw with the Bundesliga, in that there are more clean sheets. And I think if you've just been watching your own points tallies and an awful lot of backlines on Twitter, you'll know that there are an awful lot of clean sheets coming in. But based on the average of the rest of this season, they're up 50%. So it's a pretty remarkable jump, really, in the number of clean sheets so far on, a per-game basis in this very, very early days of this season. We've also seen shots in the box drop down by 21%, which is huge. And I think that would, account for quite a lot of the whole clean sheets going up thing. So basically, yes, Big at the Back has foundations anyway to return. I think obviously you're going to have one of those Big at the Back players. It has to be Trent Alexander-Arnold. If you're trying to have some sort of foil there with Robertson as a second option, it's dangerous if you're trying to replace Trent, I think, but having him as a second player, he's obviously a pretty good pick there too. And if you're not going to get into the whole Salamani thing, great, fair enough for you. And then there are plenty of other good forwards we've talked about Doherty quite a lot, and Doc or Mr. D, depending on who wants to call him what. There are a serious amount of good options.
Yeah, so on my wild card, as Tom alluded to, I kind of went from less of a big at the back, more boring at the back, but all the kind of cheaper options that kind of delivered, instead of Doherty, I went for Sice, and Sice still got, a bonus point and stuff. I had Soyuncu instead of one of the Leicester fullbacks, like Chilwell maybe. But, I think, yeah, Big at the Back certainly does seem like it is back on trend with all those clean sheets, a lot of attention. And I think, in relation to the question, if I had unlimited budget, if I could spend what I'd want, Trent obviously would still stay there, probably Doherty as well, thanks to the fantastic Wolves performances over the course of the season. He'd upgrade size. I think if I had to pick sort of four defenders, I'd probably stick another Liverpool guy in there, like Robertson, but that sounds like a bit of a boring thing to say. So perhaps my other slots would go to Luke Dean and Marcus Alonso for that Chelsea run as well. He's netted four goals this season, despite only actually having played 11 games or 12 if you count a 1-minute cameo. So he's someone that I would perhaps consider for those Chelsea fixtures. As we said, they're really, really good actually for the next five game weeks, and he seems to be back in the team as well, and looks like a bit of a luxury differential there.
Part of me wishes that the transfer market was all about defenders this week, because I can name far more defenders than I can strikers I'm interested in. It's a bit silly. So, I've got TAA, obviously. I'm buying Doherty this week. And then there's a gamut of players. So I've got Maguire myself. But I've noticed that Wan-Bissaka actually was doing stuff going forward rather than just being a body. That was really interesting, that he actually does seem to have developed some sort of forward ability. So maybe I'd be interested in him over Maguire if I was wildcarding now. Aurier, Spurs, Mourinho said that I've literally only got Aurier who can play right back. That's it. But yeah, Aurier was playing as a really far forward because Ben Davis was tucking into that centre-back position. Azpilicueta at Chelsea has been very, very good, actually, old man Dave. Not doing too badly at all, getting up and down that flank. Luka Dean, I still think he's a bit of a dark horse, even if Everton are on the beach. There's just so many there that you could possibly be looking at. And you know, in goal as well, you could feasibly chuck in the likes of Edison, De Gea, Lloris, something like a Rui Patricio. I wouldn't recommend you do that, but you could make a case because they're covering a defender in some ways to do that. Because if, you know, like Rui Patricio or something, you pay 5.2 million for a goalkeeper who's got really good fixtures going forward. I really think that TAA should be in everyone's team. That's just a given. And then I think that Doherty should be in everyone's team as well. I think that's probably, you know, beginning to get towards a given now. And then beyond that, you've got such a lovely wide range of defenders that actually it doesn't matter too much which you go with, because at the end of the day, they're going to be scoring you points. That the beauty is almost that at the start of this year, we went big at the back. And for a variety of reasons, Alisson getting injured, a few stupid mistakes by Adrian, it didn't quite work out. Now, go big at the back. Like, you know, we have the likes of Nick scoring ridiculous points. We have the likes of many other people scoring like ridiculous points by defence this week. And points were creeping up somehow at the back, despite doing nothing going forward. So it may be the time to dig at the back. And now I've said all of that and given it a ring endorsement, it's going to be an absolute fail, isn't it, next week? But there you go.
If you look at it at the fixtures especially, it's West Ham have good fixtures, but you wouldn't go near them with a 10-foot barge pole. And then you're really looking at United, who we've obviously covered, and Chelsea. And there's obviously Dave, as you've mentioned, Marcus Alonso. And then there are just, you know, there's the more dependable centre-backs there too. But I think, to be honest, Azpilicueta, you know, matches that. And I think as well, City defenders definitely need to be coming onto our radar from 33 onwards. So basically the other side of this Liverpool game, they're actually a differential too, because under normal circumstances, you wouldn't necessarily have them.
I'd almost be tempted to just say Edison or bust, because you don't really know what City defenders are going to play. Like, you just wouldn't be surprised to see him roll Harwood, Bellis, Hunderhan as the centre-back pairing for some reason. Like, just because he fancies it, basically. In normal circumstances, you'd say, yeah, Laporte if they had something to play for, but they simply don't. So I just can't. I think it'd be a bit of a waste of money, really, given the other. The other defenders who are out there, so I didn't name any, but no, I can see why you would make the case though, without destroying your point entirely.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Cool. Let's move on to
unless you fancy lockdown hero Carl Walker. Out for a while.
Well, I mean,
goal line clearance hero now.
Exactly. He's a definite contraception joke being made there. Anyway, let's move on to Chip's breakdown. So FPL Eulogy says, for people with wildcard and bench boost left, when is best to use these? Let's widen this a little bit to talk about our situations with our chips and kind of if we do have a strategy about how we're going to be deploying them going forward. Just to say to answer that particular question, that the key thing is to give the kind of vanilla advice is to do it when it fits your team. But the longer you leave it, the less value you're probably going to get out of it. However, that said, it's fine to say that if you're going for a big bang, so wildcard 37, bench boost 38 or something, that's also cool to do. Right. In terms of our chips then, what the hell are we doing? Because I've got no idea. My plan is literally to bench boost when my subs all look like they've got a decent set of fixtures. That's literally as far as I've got with my plan. Game week 37 looks like it may be the case, because I've got Sice and I've got Charlie Taylor as the two members of my defense of my bench who are always going to be on my bench, I think, at this point. And that if I keep with McCarthy and Henderson as my goalkeepers, subpar, I know, but it's goalkeepers. I'm not going to make a transfer there. So 37 looks like all three of them have got decent fixtures. So it looks like I just need to make one more transfer to get that fifth defender with decent fixture, and then I'm good for 37 bench boost. But if I do blunder into a better set of fixtures to bench boost into, I'll do it then. yeah, that's kind of where I am at the moment, just bench boost alone. Do you guys have any well-laid meticulous plans, or is it just the same as me?
Certainly not well put together plans at all. I'm similar to you in that I have the bench boost and I also have my free hits. So I have to sell good old Jay Leno, Burnt Leno, before I can bench boost at all. So I'm down a player already. So we need to fix that problem. And then I'll just basically watch for the fixtures to come around. I don't know what I'm going to do to my team in the next 5 weeks because we just don't know what's happening. So I'll just keep an eye out and watch. With regards to my free hit, Tom, you might edit this out. And if you do, okay, fair enough. But I've been looking at the crowds on Bournemouth Beach and expecting that we might have a double game week at some point with a fixture getting cancelled. So I will continue to wait for that.
Yeah, I think obviously I've used my wild card and bench boost now in the last couple of game weeks aiding my score, so I've only got left now the free hit, and I'm probably gonna hang on to that right until the end, most likely game week 38, see what happens with that game week, but yeah, that's when I'll probably be using it, as you sort of have all the games starting at the same time. Might be some leaks that hopefully are reliable, so that's most likely when I'm going to be using my chips. I think I was thinking about the question in terms of when best to use them and know what's happening, and I kind of like the idea of game week 33 is a good time to wildcard, just because it's a bit of a fixture shift. That's after the Liverpool Manchester City game, and after that Liverpool Manchester City just have amazing runs right until the end of the season, so you know, you wouldn't want a wild card this week because you wouldn't be really targeting Liverpool and Manchester City players for this game. And so I'd probably suggest 33 for the wild card. And you also see a few teams like Arsenal and Leicester and Wolves, their fixtures start to stiffen a little bit in 33 as well. So that was kind of my suggested time. Maybe even if you're not with a wild, being bench boost that week as well, because there's nice home games for a lot of teams.
Cool. All right. Excellent. Makes sense. Right. Final bit then, transfers and captains. For me this week, I'm going to be making one move. I've got two transfers, three transfers in the pocket. I'm going to keep one and use one. I'm going to do VVD to Doherty, and then I'm going to captain Aubameyang at the time of writing. And I think it's going to stay there. I've recently realised that it's been a story of over four captains. So first week back, Sterling made a lot of sense, but probably should have captained Kevin De Bruyne, shouldn't I, if we're going for the wherever you are, play like you're winning mantra. This week, Salah was obviously the best captain in retrospect, in hindsight. And I went for Bruno. I think I was probably being a bit too clever. And to be honest, when I saw that I'd gone for it, James from Planet FPL had gone for it, David Munday had gone for it, et cetera, et cetera, it was always going to be a fail, wasn't it? So, I mean, if I've had two failed captaincies in a row from overthinking it, looking at this week's fixture list, you've got Aubameyang versus Norwich. And Arsenal have 3 days rest after the FA Cup. Norwich have two. So Norwich have got a tired defence against an elite striker. Okay, can I overthink this? Probably I can. Should I? No. I'm so glad that the game week deadline is going to be Saturday. I'm going to leave it on Aubameyang, I think, and hope for the very, very best. But yeah, one transfer, the other one saved to make fun, to have fun with the bonanza of cash I'll get from smashing the Aubameyang cash cow the week after. But yeah, that will basically be it. And I'm going to bench Barnes as well and play Sice this week, finally. I bet this is going to be the Barnes actually does something and Sice loses his clean sheet.
So there was some massive talk earlier in the pod from me suggesting that maybe Eddie Nketiah might get the call for the captaincy. I don't think it's going to happen. I've never figured out how to say it. Nketiah.
That's so embarrassing, the pronunciation error from you. It's really terrible,
especially because I'm getting definitely get the Portuguese ones all wrong anyway. Bruno Fernandes. Anyhow, I don't think he's actually going to end up being captained in the end. It's unlikely to be a player participating in the City versus Liverpool game, or the other way around, Liverpool at home, Liverpool versus City game. So after that, it could be Anas Raoul. It could be another Man United player just for the crack. Maybe it'll be Doherty away to Aston Villa just because, you know, home doesn't matter anymore. I'm not quite sure is the honest answer. I'm certainly going to sleep on it twice, which would be nice, getting to sleep on a captaincy decision twice for once in the new season.
Yeah, I think for me, I'm going to be rolling my transfer. There's nothing urgent that needs to be done, and I'd rather have two free transfers to think about once I probably sell Aubameyang and start to get a third Liverpool or another Manchester City or United player in, so that's what I'll probably be doing, is just rolling it for this game week at least. And in terms of the captain, it is between Jimenez and Aubameyang. You know, we talked about it extensively. I'm probably leaning towards Aubameyang with the armband at the moment. Just feels like the more exciting, slightly more explosive pick. So possibly him, I think, will be getting the armband. But yeah, still kind of deciding there.
Perfecto. So those are our teams. Best of luck to everybody this coming weekend and after that, because this is one of the most stretched out game weeks that I've seen in a long time. But we were who got the assist. Thanks so much for listening to this.
Yeah, thanks, guys. And we'll be back next Thursday for another quick turnaround record after quite a slow burn game week that's going to be happening over the next week.
Well, you guys had it all. That's a lot for this week. I hope this assists you. Choose your striker in game week 32. But for now, I'll speak to you very, very soon.
Slan.
All right, 11:45. Jeez. All right, okay. I better go.
Right.
All right.
I know.
Cheers, Tom.
Bye, guys.
All right.
Oh, it's a goal. Who got the assist? Who got the assist?
Sports Social Podcast Network.